You are listening to Art Not Science, presented by the Physics Room Contemporary Art Space, a monthly podcast of artist talks, panel discussions, and other events.
Kia ora, my name is Jamie Hanton, and I'm the director of the Physics Room, a contemporary art space dedicated to developing and promoting contemporary art and critical discourse in Aotearoa, New Zealand. Based in Central Christchurch since 1996, we assist artists with resources and opportunities to achieve a higher level of professional and creative development and encourage a greater acknowledgement, understanding, and value of contemporary art among New Zealanders. Our goal is to actively seek links between the arts and other areas of cultural production and to involve art as a contributing voice in wider intellectual, social, and political debate.
Kia ora, I'm Shell Wang, Assistant Curator at the Physics Room. In this episode of Art Not Science, I talk to Daniel Shasky, Katie Kerr, and Matthew Galloway, all of whom are graphic designers, artists, and publishers, about arts publishing and design during a pandemic. This conversation was prompted by Daniel's work, System to System, a chapterized hard copy publication with a time-delayed distribution method in our upcoming exhibition, Domino Domino. Daniel was due to add another chapter to System to System when the nationwide lockdown was announced the day before the exhibition was due to open. So this chapter has sat at the printers ever since. Without access to printers or an audience for physical publications, how have publishers responded to the sudden lockdown? Daniel Shasky, Katie Kerr, and Matthew Galloway discuss Avian Loop, As Needed as Possible, and Pan Publication, their respective publishing projects, which have all been launched digitally in response to the lockdown. They will also discuss the challenges and possibilities of digital publications, the joy of holding a piece of paper, and how the community that surrounds the printed copy is as important as ever. Daniel Shasky is an Ōtautahi-based designer and artist publisher whose practice walks an intersection of disciplines amongst art, design, craft, and literature to produce books that explore ideas around virtuality, physicality, speculation, and cybernetics. He is also the graphic designer and web store manager at Infinite Definite. Katie Kerr is based in Tamaki Makaurau, Auckland, where she runs Studio Katie Kerr, a design practice that focuses on the creation of publications, identities, and printed materials in the broad field of the contemporary cultural sector. She is also one half of Gloria Books, an experimental publishing platform run with Berlin-based photographer Alice Conyu, the manager of Strange Goods and Strange Haven, and currently lecturing at AUT. Matthew Galloway is an artist and designer based in Otepoti, Dunedin. In his practice, he uses the tools and methodologies of design to investigate issues of identity, understanding of place, and the political implications of both. He is also the senior lecturer in design communications at Otago Polytechnic. Now let's get into the discussion and see what they have to say. Welcome all to Art Not Science, episode 11, where we will talk about your publishing projects and publishing in a pandemic more broadly as well. I'll kick it off and just ask each of you to talk about your recent projects, starting with you, Daniel, your publishing projects, System to System and Avian Loop.
Cool. Yeah, so they're both quite separate projects, but both of them tend to share this kind of lo-fi production method. They're both intended to be physical things as well, which is an interesting thing amongst the COVID-19 environment. System to System is a project that came about as a response to the show Sympathetic Resonance at the SUDA in Nelson. Mm-hmm. And Sarah McClintock, who was the curator of that show, she gave us a prompt, which was about the idea of when you tune a tuning fork and you strike it, then it can affect another one. So there's this kind of unseen connection between them. And so a lot of my practice so far has been really interested in looking at unseen connections or relationships between different systems and like organic systems and mechanical systems, which is often kind of shown through the lens of artist publishing because I am interested in a relationship that people have with books and with objects. So the idea of this response was that I was going to create a publication that could kind of span space and time. And so it was going to be set up on a physical sort of kiosk in the space, and I would periodically add new sections to it as I finished them. And so it would run through the duration of the show. but without any kind of schedule to it. It was quite random and there was no end point to it. So I didn't really know what each chapter was going to be until I was working on it. So each one informed the next one. Yeah, it was all designed quite simply, but it was meant to be quite open-ended. And that's been continuing on, and we're going to bring it into the show at the Physics Room, Domino Domino.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's, it hasn't been a digital thing. It's been like primarily quite physical. It's all about like the way that you interact with it in a space.
Yep.
And so we talked about making it digital, but decided not to.
Mm-hmm.
The other project, Avian Loop, is a project that has come out of the monthly writing group that the Physics Room initiated back in 2017. It's kind of ebbed and flowed ever since. And it's been somewhat run by Gwyn Porter. And she had talked a while ago about starting a publication for that group, which is quite an open group. There's not really much structure to it. And the idea would be that it would just be this cheap, low-cost photocopy publication that we would put out every now and then that would just contain the writing that was generated through that group. And so that's what Avian Loop has kind of come about, that we started talking about that more seriously over the last few months and finally got on to compiling a Google Doc full of everyone's writing and developed the publication, which was supposed to be a physical thing and we were going to distribute it between us. But then after the lockdown happened, we kind of talked about how we could make it into a digital publication as well as like, it will be a physical one eventually as well. And so we ended up distributing it as a email newsletter through the Physics Room mailing list, which was really interesting. And yeah.
And Matt, would you like to talk about PAN next?
Yeah, sure. So how did PAN come about? Well, really, just before lockdown, when we were in that weird, like, in between level 3, level 4 zone, I guess I had this, like, moment of panic where I realized we were going to go into this lockdown, and I wasn't really sure what that meant for me with my practice and, you know, how I was going to keep busy. But then also I had this weird, like, little flashback to the earthquake vibes of Christchurch when I did the Silver Bulletin. That was the awakening of my practice being really focused around publications. And I found it a really useful thing back then in terms of, you know, a way to process what we were going through. The Silver Bulletin was like it was just this map of a bunch of contributors and people who were living and working through the earthquake and the aftermath of the earthquake. And it became this archive of that time. So there's two things going on, I think, with PAN. One is me feeling like those vibes of crisis and weird world circumstance kind of collapsing around me again made me feel like doing something. And then also just my own very maybe unhealthy feelings around trying to keep myself busy and feeling like I had a purpose. And I guess in that moment of panic in between like level 3 and level 4, I rang up Gilbert May, who runs a risograph studio down in Dunedin, because I realized his studio is also where he lives. So I thought there's a possibility that he could actually be living in self-isolation, but also printing publications. So I rang him and he was like, this is a great idea, but we need to order paper today because we won't be able to get paper otherwise. And so we ordered paper. I was like, okay, fine. And we ordered like, I don't know, like $800 worth of paper. And we haven't even printed one yet. Like one's getting printed at the moment, the first issue. So it's taken us the whole of the lockdown to get to this point. But I was just reflecting on the fact that if I hadn't had that conversation with Gilbert and we hadn't committed to buying the paper, I don't know if I would have followed through with the project. And so there's this quite nice thought I'm having about committing to something and the physical nature of it existing, even though PAN has only so far existed as an online publication, which was always the plan as well for it to have like a, you know, web PDF download and a physical thing. But yeah, so PAN, it kind of exists because of a flurry of activity just before lockdown, but I'm glad that that happened and that it does exist because of that. I think the other thing I'll say as well is that the other catalyst for it was last year I was over in Italy on residency and then in Spain doing a project. And so I was also in constant contact with my friends in Italy and Spain while things were really, really bad over there. which was coinciding with us deciding to go into lockdown here. And all the contributions to the first issue, apart from my own one, are from my friends from Italy and Spain. And so it was almost like they were in the super crisis mode and they really wanted to say stuff, and they really kind of connected with this idea of getting a publication together. And so I liked the idea that the publication could exist and it didn't have to be all New Zealand contributions or only from one location or another, but it was more like the people I was connected with or having conversations with at the time. So that was the other element of it as well.
Right. I had wondered that because of how quickly you'd managed to get it put together, whether or not it was part of something that you were already in conversation with people about.
Mm, yeah, and also maybe because it's just me, you know, like I'm doing all of it. And so there's a responsiveness to that that's harder for like an institution to pull off, because there's more moving parts and there's more decision making that maybe is shared amongst people. Mm-hmm. Whereas I was just like, I'm going to do this. And then I did it.
Well done. And can you tell us about the name Pan? Is that sort of to do with the global contributors?
Yeah, definitely. The idea of Pan, like obviously like pandemic, but I was thinking about Pan meaning a lot of different things. Mm-hmm. So like Pan is like a, you know, like a part of the word pandemic, because it's kind of, you know, like this idea of global or all encompassing. And then also the idea of like in film, I guess, and in different ways that you can have like a panning shot. Just this idea of trying to, yeah, I don't know, see stuff and get some kind of coverage of things.
Yeah.
And then beyond that, it was just a weird three-letter name that also in like in Spanish, it means bread. So like there's different things about it that are kind of nice because it is a simple word. Maybe it just sticks with people more, and it's just the first name I came up with. And then after that, I came up with lots of more kind of like, I don't know, cool sounding names or like clever ideas that just always felt too kind of weird and clever. So I just went back to the first name. Yeah.
I feel like there's a real need for simplicity at the moment as well.
Yeah.
Potentially calling it bread, and how, you know, everyone's been making bread at home, and there's sort of a back to simple methods of making.
That's right. Yeah, I like that idea that it had that correlation to bread, and just, yeah, the idea of daily bread and all that stuff. Yeah, totally.
I love the sense of having all that paper is motivating you to make the publication.
Yeah, but I think, you know, you could probably talk to this too, like, and all of us can, the idea that often the material nature of the publication does provide the pressure. I don't know, it's like just asking someone to contribute, the minute you do that, mm-hmm. you're like, you kind of signed a contract with them. Like at a certain point I got really anxious about getting the publication out, even though it was quite quick, but I just felt like the stuff people had written, I felt a real kind of duty to get it out to the world. And like even for how quickly time's moving and the context of the world is changing real quick. And so it felt like it was important to get stuff out. But, you know, all of those things, like, okay, I've invited people to do it, I've spent money on paper, you know, like these things suddenly almost lock you in to a self-imposed deadline to get it done. That, yeah, if you just sit around thinking, oh, I'll do this, I should do this, whatever, it can never happen.
Yeah, I definitely understand that, like, sense of, I think the most nervous part of any sort of bookmaking project is when you first hit send to an email to a contributor, because it kind of feels like until you do that, the project doesn't actually exist.
Yeah.
And then when you first send that first email out to someone and say, hey, do you want to be part of this project? It actually sort of, then you're actually working to a deadline, and then you're actually working to make something that exists kind of outside of your own head.
Cool. So Katie, could you tell us about As Needed As Possible, your publication that you worked on with Enjoy? Well, are still working on.
Yeah, it's quite it's ongoing, and who knows when it will actually be printed. But it sort of started as a typical project, like as a collaboration between Enjoy and Gloria Books, which is a publishing output that I run with a Berlin-based photographer Alice Conyu. Mm-hmm. And we call Gloria, we call it an intercontinental publishing platform. And we choose the word platform because instead of a publishing house, we don't actually publish other people's books. Instead, we use Gloria kind of like a support structure for us to experiment with taking on the entire bookmaking process ourselves. So most of Gloria's books are kind of these nose-to-tail publications of ours where we experiment with what happens when the artist takes on the entire publishing process. So I guess it's less of a house and more of a tree house where Alice and I go to play with the publishing process. But since these kind of self-initiated projects, they can often take us a really long time to complete, sometimes years. We occasionally collaborate with a group of editors who we really trust and we work closely with to produce the content part of the book. And this is what we were doing with As Needed As Possible. It's sort of one of those projects where the editorial process kind of belongs to Enjoy and the aesthetic process is handed over to Gloria. And there's always a little bit of sort of natural overlap that happens in those collaborative projects like that. But it's kind of started out at the start of the year as a more typical publication collaboration. Sophie and Simon from Enjoy came to me with the idea of producing what we thought would be just a simple print publication. And the project had kind of emerged from thinking and talking and making around art and labour and life in New Zealand, and particularly in relation to the contemporary art space. And the whole kaupapa of the project was really beautiful, and it kind of focused on building upon these conversations with friends and colleagues about sort of how to make a life and a living around art. So Gloria was really on board with that, of course. And so we started the project, but of course we went into lockdown in the middle of the editorial stage, which was quite difficult for us in terms of sort of how to reframe much of the content, because a lot of it had been written in this kind of pre-COVID-19 world. So we were kind of unsure whether a lot of the content would still work if it was published, you know, now in this new normal. But also like how we would go about actually physically publishing a book in this new environment. So we kind of just talked about it and we came to the conclusion that we would just start publishing some of the contributions sort of periodically over the course of the lockdown in the form of downloadable PDFs. Yeah. And that's kind of...
So the PDFs emerged out of the COVID environment.
Yeah, and it was kind of interesting because, you know, we wouldn't have normally done that. Mm. But as soon as we started talking about how we would put this content online, I got quite excited about the PDF as a format. Right. And that was for a few reasons. And one is that I work as a designer, I work with PDFs all the time. They're a very commonly used document. Is kind of exchange between like editors and designers and proofreaders and printers as a publication sort of evolves from concept all the way to print. Mm-hmm. And if you kind of track the PDF along its journey, it can be quite an interesting insight particularly into the graphic designer's process or the book designer's process, sort of an archive of thinking that's really seen outside of the designer's folders. You know, they kind of hide it away and no one ever sees that process. So I kind of wanted to use this as an opportunity to make the PDF as a space for design research and experimentation. So each PDF is kind of like a opportunity for what could happen in the book. So each time I design a PDF, I'm thinking I'm using it as a piece of research, basically. And a possible point of departure for the upcoming printed publication.
You are listening to Art Not Science, presented by the Physics Room Contemporary Art Space.
Cool. It sounds really, really interesting, and maybe we'll use that as a starting off point to talk about how eventually this will turn into a publication, as will Pan for you, Matt, and Avian Loop for you, Daniel. Could you guys talk about, I guess, what's missing in a digital publication that drives you guys to want to print it?
Well, I think, like, if I could, pick up on that and also what Katie was just saying. I mean, I've really enjoyed seeing both Avian Loop and the Enjoy Project, each of the PDFs as they've come out, because, like, with Avian Loop coming out through just, like, an email, I thought that was really nice, like, the way it managed to kind of achieve something that felt really nicely kind of, like, laid out and readable, but also specific to that format. And with As Possible As Needed, like, I've just been really into the, like, design of the PDF. And you can kind of tell, I guess, Katie, that you've been designing them as PDFs, like, with that in mind. And like, personally, that's it, like, it got me quite excited thinking more about designing for PDFs. And yeah, I was just, like, a big fan of them both. And I think, like, in terms of the Pan, like, I haven't really done it yet. I just had to get it out. But I thought it made me think also about, like, this idea of it existing on a website and then maybe as a PDF differently to then as it would exist in print. Mm. So maybe there's three different examples. And I'm really excited about all of those possibilities as ways of ingesting content, because, you know, there's nothing that can kind of replace the physical thing in certain circumstances, but there's so much possibility through digital formats that allow content to be read and distributed so much quicker and cheaper. Yeah, I don't know. I don't feel so tied to the printed publication. I still think it's really special, but I see it as one avenue, maybe more so than I ever have. Yeah.
Yeah. I was listening to your artist talk for Beyond Exhausted the other day, and you talked about how difficult it is to distribute publications. So I guess I'm wondering why you hadn't made a digital publication before.
Just because, like, I haven't really spent much time learning to do stuff on the internet. And this process of, like, doing Pan was actually like a boot camp, and trying to design a website that was half passable was something that would work. Mm. That's just like a work in progress for me. Like, I hope that maybe in like 6 months it's a much better website than it is at the moment. But that's the main thing, like, quite simply.
Right. Cool. And what about you, Daniel? How have you found distributing Avian Loop digitally, and what do you miss about print?
It's been interesting because it went out to like an email audience, it was still somewhat select. Like, there's not going to be that many people, and it's not that accessible to everybody at the moment. But I think that there is a kind of interesting thing with digital publishing where it has this like limitlessness to it. I quite like in Pan, in the colophon, how you put in there was like a printed edition of 250 and then PDF times infinity. That was quite good. Like, you don't have to worry about only printing so many because they can just keep going and people can keep picking them up and they'll last forever. But yeah, it's kind of tricky because I really like physical things. It's like a really massive part of my practice, I think, is the tactile paper edition. And so it's been an interesting thing to engage with. I think often the printed edition for me is kind of to my detriment because I don't always have the resources available to actually print the projects that I want to make. And so I've been really wanting to push myself into more of a digital publishing area. And I think that the idea of possibility is really interesting, like that you can quite easily create these websites that can be publishing projects and kind of just need a few lines of CSS or something to make it happen. And I think if you think about the history of artist books as well, that lots of people when they kind of came about, it was talked about the democratization of art through publishing. And I think that digital publishing is kind of, I guess, it was always a problematic idea to think about it because there was never going to reach that many people as a printed book. But then it is an interesting step in that process of moving from democratizing gallery work into publishing and then publishing into digital.
Mm.
I want to be excited about digital publishing, but I'm just not.
How come?
there's quite a few reasons, really. One is that, you know, I think it's quite limited in the sense of, I got quite excited a few years ago when the New York Times started doing these long form journalism pieces online where they would actually build a website for a story. Mm-hmm. And it was very interactive, and you could have, it was very well designed, and you could have video, and you could have all this great audio and content, and things would move on the page, and it was really cool. And then they stopped doing it. because I imagine it was incredibly expensive and quite unsustainable to kind of keep that production of making that up. And then I guess, you can keep things online, but I was talking to Chris from Compound Press the other day, and he was talking about how a lot of small poetry publishing only exists online, has the problem of archiving. So often they only exist until someone stops paying for the domain name and then they disappear. And, you know, he says it's better to take up space, even if it's, you know, at the bottom of a bookshelf or even in the gutter, you know, someone might find you there. It's better to do that than to completely disappear. And then another conversation that kind of puts me in this headspace as well is when I was talking, particularly around lockdown, I was talking to Rosabelle Tan from Satellites about another project we were working on, and she mentioned how with all of her projects that she was doing, everyone's response to the lockdown was go digital, put everything online. And she was trying to find sort of alternative ways of merely just, you know, turning something that should be physical into something that is online. And because people need to engage with tangible things, it's a really important part of life. And you know, maybe it's just my sort of romantic attachment to the book as an object, but I also think that there are issues with distributing things online as well, because of algorithms, you are kind of led down certain paths towards what you consume online. Whereas if you were, you know, say you're in a bookstore and you're sort of browsing the bookshelves of the travel section, and you, you know, someone's accidentally put a poetry book by Hera Lindsey Bird in there and you pick it up and it's the first time you've ever read any poetry and you've kind of introduced to this, you know, that's through the book's physicality. Mm-hmm. And I'm kind of interested in how, because of that tangibility of a book, as a book as an object, it can kind of disrupt what we are normally seeing. You know, you're more likely to find something that disrupts your normal frame of references at the bookstore than you are on your bookmarked web pages, for example. So I guess there's that. And with this publishing project that we were doing with As Many As Possible, one of the things we kind of have really encouraged, and the reason we wanted to use the PDF format, was for people to print it out on their home printer. I don't know if anyone actually will, but there is that option that they can print it and hold a piece of paper and feel like that has come from someone else, even if they've printed it on their, you know, shitty inkjet printer at home. I feel like we need that physicality, and particularly in lockdown when everything is so digitalized, it's nice to touch something.
I am interested in the way that you talk about the possibilities of the PDF. How do you think you're going to explore that further as the next installments come out?
Well, I've been really enjoying my home printer. We're really into printing out these PDFs as I make them, and using that as a tool. You know, in lockdown, we've kind of had to use what's around us in terms of like references and tools and things like that. So I've kind of embraced that. But the PDF, I don't know. I've never really explored it as a format before, so it's been quite interesting time to do that. The first one that that we did, I was looking at how you print emails. and how when you go to print emails, things, elements always end up in weird places. You know, you end up with a bit of text over there and like maybe a button kind of like hanging half off the page, and using those elements in there. And that came about just from printing the email exchange between the two contributors and then kind of taking those elements from there, which was quite fun. But I don't know how to, I don't know how it'll turn out. It's a work in progress.
Do you think the design will change much now? Like, because I'm assuming there'll still be a physical book at some point. Like, do you think that these PDFs will, you know, basically translate to the book, or will the book look completely different?
Well, I think it's going to have to, because all of Gloria's books that I make are of the same size. They're a paperback size. So they're, you know, a much smaller page. And I've kind of done that intentionally because I want it to change. I didn't necessarily want to just sort of bind it all together and print it out. I wanted to use it as a space to kind of experiment, but not necessarily make final decisions.
Right.
Do you think that some of the elements that you brought into it will translate across there? Like,
yeah, I think that's that. Hopefully, that's there'll be things that I pull out of it that I go, okay, yeah, that worked. I'll continue to use that, or like, oh no, in hindsight, that was a terrible idea. Yeah,
I quite like the idea that it's a work in progress. That like, you've already started publishing it, but you're still working on it, and so kind of. It spans over that period. It's quite it feels like it's documenting the time really well.
You are listening to Art Not Science, presented by the Physics Room Contemporary Art Space.
Yeah, I mean, I'm interested to hear you guys' thoughts on that, around like exposing the designer's process. I'm interested in the behind the scenes side of that and what happens, and particularly around the collaboration between people as well. Have you guys managed to collaborate? Obviously you've collaborated with your contributors. Have you collaborated with anyone else on these projects?
This is a pretty collaborative process, generating the email.
But Avian Loop would have been collaborative from the beginning. The writing group had been working off a Google Doc for a long time. And then before that, you were talking about what shape it was going to take in your monthly meetups.
It was a very personal process. Like, we would kind of meet up once, like on the first, roughly the first Monday of every month. And we'd talk about it and kind of set ourselves up a bit of a system now that we'll kind of rotate them out every 3 weeks, hopefully, or 3 months, sorry, where we'll have one meeting where we present writing, and then the meeting after that we'll go through and edit it, like as a group, rather than sending it off to an editor. We're all kind of editing each other's texts, and then it gets sent to me as a final edited copy, and I will typeset it, which has been quite a nice process. But yeah, it's very like interactive, so it was weird to then make this a digital thing, but also worked really well as an email, because emailing is a really prominent part of the writing group as well, is that we a lot of the time share writing via email.
In terms of like design, did you feel quite restricted by the email format? Because there's only a certain amount of things you can do within an email, right?
Yeah, thankfully I actually, in my day job, I design emails as well, and so I kind of a little bit knew what I was doing, but It was a bit of a nightmare at some points. It's also was interesting because I guess kind of unlike the PDFs, I designed it as a print publication already. Mm-hmm. I already had the design sitting there, and I decided to then translate that into a digital thing, which was kind of difficult.
Because you had to design it for different size screens, so the text had to scale. It couldn't be an image and things like that.
Yeah, we started by putting an image in there. Like, we just I exported it as images and then put it through MailChimp, and the text was tiny. Especially when you go down to like a phone size, it gets really difficult. And so you have to somehow or other create coded text that responds to the size of the screen, which is fun.
Well, I think it worked out really well. Matt, similar to your question for Katie, is PAN going to look different in printed form?
No, not the first issue. Like, it's basically going to be whatever the PDF looks like translated to print, mm-hmm. but a different color. So the whole first issue is just going to be in red ink and on the website. I mean, this is interesting as well. I feel like you can, with digital stuff, you know, you can tinker away at it. So since I launched the website like a week ago, I think I've uploaded and like different versions of the PDF maybe two or three times. And so like at a certain point, you might've seen a red one where like it was spreads. And then now at the moment it's a black one where it's all single pages. Cause I decided, I had this real debate in my mind about like, do I show it as spread so that it's kind of like how it would look in a, as a publication, or do I show it as single pages because that's better for maybe like reading it as a PDF online and also printing it if you did want to print it like single page A4. And I basically arrived at, okay, I'm going to go with the black and single page so that there is a difference between that and what you would get if you saw and managed to get hold of a printed one. So it's a small difference at the moment, but I don't know. I kind of like the idea that I might start designing it a little bit differently for the PDF, like single column text that can be a bit bigger and just things like that. But I only kind of realized that through the process of trying it out for the first time. And I think, you know, with anything like this, you learn as you go along. And yeah, I mean, again, definitely seeing Katie's ones, I've recognized some of the things she's doing, which are working really nicely with the single page and like single column and stuff. And I'm like, oh man, I'm totally gonna like use that and maybe steal some of what's successful there. I do like the idea that you've got maybe three different experiences between purely online, PDF download and physical publication. And I definitely agree that there's something really special about the physical publication. And I like the idea that that would be the most special and most designed version of the publication.
Charge for those publications? Because maybe that's where the difference is, right? Like a lot are free.
I need to think about all of that. I'm just in the middle of trying to figure out some funding and get all of that stuff sorted. Yeah, which again is just like really tough to have time to get it all together. Yeah, and one part of it could be, you know, if you only do like a limited edition, like of 250 of them or something, that you could definitely charge people for them as a way of recouping some costs. My problem is I'm always just so keen to get the project started and do the project that both the distribution and the mechanisms around how people get it and if they pay for it and all that stuff, it's not like an afterthought, but it's the worst thought. It's the thought that I don't want to think about. I don't want it to be really taking up my time, but it's a really important part. So, yeah.
Maybe it doesn't matter so much if it's available online.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, maybe that's why I'm enjoying the online process, because at a certain point I could just press go and tell everyone that it was there and then can see, oh, like people have engaged with the website and people are telling me they liked it or whatever. And there was an instantaneousness to it, which was quite lovely and something that you don't necessarily get with a printed publication, unless maybe on like a launch or if it's a part of an exhibition. And so you've got that ability to be around other people as they see it for the first time.
So given that you guys are excited about digital publishing, or at least some aspects of digital publishing, how do you think that this pandemic, the way that it's forced a lot of galleries and publications to go online, how that will change publishing going forward?
I think about this email I got the other day from a friend who was kind of involved in art publishing overseas, and she's just sort of recently moved back, and she sent me an email when Bauer Media folded. And we were kind of mourning the loss of these kind of legendary publications. But on the flip side, we were also kind of discussing how the fall of giants can often pave the way for new growth. And, you know, particularly in arts publishing, there's a lot of potential, I think, now. Like these big publications, they were owned by an overseas company with sort of little emotional investment in how publishing impacts local culture. And to a certain extent, I kind of think the publications were aging with their subscribers, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. But I do think there's an opportunity there to rethink what publishing in New Zealand looks like, whether it's digital, whether it's printed, and particularly in arts publishing. I think there's kind of, there could be some really interesting things to grow out of the space that's been made. I don't know, maybe we could look at things that have more sort of sustainable models and localized investments and things like that. I think of Stone Soup magazine. They're, you know, that's paid for by regular donors, for example, who are all locals, who are all kind of invested in the community that publication creates. I'm kind of interested in those models, and I think possibly, I don't know, I might be dreaming here, but there could be, particularly with the emphasis on buying local and purchasing local and things that are produced in New Zealand, there could be an interesting space there for publishing.
So you see it getting more local in a really nice way?
I hope so.
Yeah.
Maybe that's optimistic.
What about you, Daniel or Matt?
Yeah, it's definitely thinking about like cost management more, because that is one of the main things about digital publishing that I'm taking, is like how there are these ways to create more cost-effective publishing projects. Because so far, most of my projects have kind of been in a gallery or institutional context, and the projects that I've had in my mind to get going outside of that have been really difficult because of the resources that I don't have. Yeah, it's kind of that same thing, like thinking about where that room for growth is and thinking about ways to make that happen that aren't necessarily as traditional. There's still a lot of thinking to be done there, but whether that's like implementing a digital aspect to publishing, but then bringing a physical side of it as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. One of the first things that I did in lockdown was kind of go online and start ordering books. And also, like, I've been really engaged with my bookshelf as a thing. Like, I definitely have been enjoying having books around to take me away from staring at a screen all day. And so there's definitely no way that will ever be replaced. And I think that is kind of something that needs to be embraced. Yeah, I don't know.
I've been enjoying your Instagram series of books to read. Yeah. Recommended books. It's great.
Yeah, it's good. It got me to finally read The Medium is the messer.
So good, right?
Yeah.
Great.
I think, like, for me, publishing, like, it kind of has to be about community in some way or another. Like, the kind of publishing that we do, and I guess especially in the arts, is focused around a group of people, and whether that's people who have got some kind of, like, connection through the kind of work they make, or whether it's, like, a physical connection. I feel like often the publications I'm interested in are trying to like group people together and show some of those connections in interesting ways. So I think the online space allows that to happen more. For me, if I can be less, I guess, like snobby about like the printed thing, then maybe it helps some of the immediacy of that to kind of grow and happen more quickly. But I also think, like, similar to maybe what Daniel was saying, the resource thing is hard. Like, you know, when I did the Silver Bulletin, I was really lucky because I was one of the first postgrad students doing design postgrad at ILM, right when they got all this new printing machinery with the risograph and stuff, and they didn't have a way of charging for it yet. And like, I just used it without having to pay for it. And so there was that. And then a lot of the publications I've done since have similarly been tied to an exhibition project that I've done. So they've been lumped into funding either from a gallery or from my institution or from Creative New Zealand based on the fact that it's attached to an organization. So, you know, like if you have a show at the Physics Room or wherever it is, you're more likely to maybe attract additional funding to help with publishing projects than just being like a standalone designer wanting to start a publication. And then obviously like being a standalone designer is not a financially like affluent position to be in to start a publication. So, yeah, I think different models, maybe what Katie was talking about how we can use that community to actually like fund the projects or identify that these are the kinds of projects we want to have in our communities, then that also feels like a way that we could start to, I don't know, create more sustainable models for financing projects. A lot of the different projects that you kind of can trace back through New Zealand art publishing history basically start and end because of financial reasons, which is not like, you know, rocket science, but quite often it becomes about, well, basically we got sick of applying for funding every single time and we didn't have a sustainable model to allow that process to kind of like let us grow. Money.
It all comes back to money.
You are listening to Art Not Science, presented by the Physics Room Contemporary Art Space.
Well, it sounds like if this encourages more digital output and that if it's cheaper, it might be more sustainable, we might be looking forward to a more prosperous publication environment.
I certainly hope so. I mean, we had an opportunity at Strangehaven to kind of test the waters around interest in art publications back in 2017, because we hosted the Winter Art Book Fair. I'd been making these books with Gloria and I had nowhere to sell them. So we kind of decided to start this, do this fair just as a way to start selling these books. We knew lots of people who were making books but had nowhere to sell them. And so we set it up in our sort of tiny studio space on Kay Road with 12 or so local publishers. And we thought we might get a few people sort of to come along on a Thursday evening to buy some books. And we put up the Facebook event. And a couple of days before the event, Sam, who runs the space with me, like called me in a panic to say we had 600 people attending on our Facebook event. And we were like, oh no, what are we going to do? But it was great. And there was so many people came, and so many people came through the doors, and people came and they brought books and they talked with the publishers. And there was a real buzz about it. And we could really see the interest that people had in actually wanting to engage with these types of publications. And so from there, we kind of did a few more fairs, and then we ended up opening up the small permanent store, Strange Goods, at the front of the space. And we've only ever really had encouragement from the community about that. And, you know, the bookshop, although it doesn't really make any money, it survives. And people come in and they're just so excited to be able to engage physically in a space like that. I think up here in Auckland, when we lost Fine Arts Library and the Architecture Library, people realised the value of being able to engage physically with books. And there was a lot of conversation around researching and how you needed to have all the books present in the library, because you didn't go there looking for one particular thing. You went to browse and come stumble across something that might sort of create an idea. So I think, although there's, I'm really into digital publishing, and I think it is an awesome output, and I love Matt's idea around being able to publish it in multiple platforms, and that's kind of the future. I think there is always going to be that need for something physical. Well, I hope there is. I'm building a giant bookcase in my house at the moment, so I'm sorry. I hope people keep making books.
There's certainly that different kind of community that's built around physical books. Like, you don't really see art book fairs for PDFs or websites. These fairs that happen all over the world, and that everybody, like tens or hundreds of thousands of people go to, like the New York one. There's obviously this massive community for it. Like, talking about the closing of the library is really interesting, because looking to Auckland from something like Christchurch has been really interesting to get a picture of what the publishing community is like there, with places like Samoa House Library opening up, and then of course, yeah, Strange Goods is doing amazing things. It's definitely a different kind of community that I think is really nice. And that's that kind of thing that if you go to an art book fair, you are more likely to stumble across something that you may have not alternatively stumbled across.
Right. So I guess you see the potential in digital, but there's still something really important about the physical, and that going forward, you guys will probably still do both.
I think the more ways you can engage someone with the work, the better, right? So having an online space to do that is always important. when we sell out of our books, we often make the PDF available, like, and people can purchase that at a cheaper price so that the book can live on, even if it's been printed on a risograph and we'll never print it again because it was such an ordeal.
yeah.
Then, you know, it's still available to be read, and that's quite nice too. I hate it when you can't find a book because it's sold out and you want to read something, the content bit, but it's the physical versions are all gone. That's the worst. Yeah, I'm just really stoked to be talking about, like, publication design with you guys. This is awesome. Matt, I'm interested to know whether having a break from teaching gave you the opportunity to work on this project as well. Have you been teaching?
Oh, yeah, no, we've been teaching, like, totally nonstop crazy, actually. Yeah, so we went into lockdown and immediately the students had, like, a two-week break while we scrambled to figure out how we were going to teach everything online. And then we went straight into teaching it with just, like, the 4 days over Easter. But I do think there's a weird efficiency around having to teach online where I have been able to fit this project in just around stuff because I'm just at my computer and I'm not physically going from one place to another. And so, yeah, I've kind of just been able to switch between, okay, I've got like 30 minutes now. I'm going to like email some people about Pan or work on trying to figure out this website or whatever. And it's just kind of, they've just folded together all right. But yeah, I mean, it maybe comes back to what I said at the very beginning around me just being slightly unhealthy and my need to keep busy than anything else. And like, I have to say, I have been in a some way or another like regretted doing Pan like multiple times. like now even as well, like as I roll out of one issue and start to kind of bring everything together for the second issue. Yeah, it's just like a big undertaking. I'm real happy about it, but I'm also like, I could have just chilled. I could have done that. Like, I didn't have to do this. But yeah.
Yeah, I think like you kind of at the start of lockdown, you thought you were going to have all this time and then you just fill it up with projects and then you just end up being crazy busy, right? That's what's happened to me.
Yeah. I had a question for Daniel about the system to system project and whether that's changed at all because of the pandemic in terms of like it was going to get released or continue through the physics room, right? Like just before or just around the time we went into lockdown?
Yeah, so opening was supposed to be like the day before lockdown officially started. And Jamie and I kind of talked about how we could make the publication digital. And we talked about setting up a website where you could play with the design of it and publish it in that way. But at the end, I kind of felt that it needed to be physical and you needed to interact with it in that space.
Maybe to finish off this podcast, I'd just like to ask what we can expect next in the next issues or installments of your publications. And maybe you could tell us about whether or not this period in lockdown will affect your practice going forward.
I guess in the past, I kind of steered quite clear of digital publishing because it hasn't really interested me. And so maybe to an extent, this has kind of made me think about it more. But it's also really just kind of concreted my interest in physical things. I kind of think that to an extent, like these two projects will go ahead as they would have regardless. But it could be a good way to think about the other projects that I've got floating around in my head that I want to start getting out there and ways to do them that are potentially easier to distribute.
And what about you, Matt?
Pan issue 2 is in the works. I'm trying to, like, they're trying to come out like every month around about. So like they'll kind of straddle a month. Like this one was April, May, and the next one will be May, June, and so on and so forth. I'm trying to get some funding sorted so that it's a sustainable project for a wee while. And then also I'm trying to challenge myself as an editor as well to form some kind of editorial vibe around each issue. And I think, I don't know, like vibe's probably the best you can go for. I don't think you can kind of like peg people into a certain way of producing content or to be so directive in what you're asking them to write about or respond to. I'm trying to think about that at the moment, whether I can strike that balance right between it feeling immediate and, yeah, and vital, but then also considered.
Right. And will issue two be as explicitly about the pandemic?
Well, the whole, like, my editorial thing that I've been saying to people is kind of like, we're in this moment where nothing is not about the pandemic, so it kind of has to be. And it doesn't have to specifically reference it at all, but basically everyone is. And I think that's what's interesting about it for me. Like, again, drawing on the earthquake experience, it was just that we were all living through it, and it was the only context we kind of had at the time. And so I think that's the reason why the publication exists in the first place, and why it maybe is important to do it for at least me.
And what about you, Katie? What's next with As Needed As Possible?
We're keeping it very fluid. The name As Needed As Possible is quite apt because we're kind of releasing these as we can. And we're keeping it sort of quite up in the air about how many we release before we start doing the printed publication. And because I think at the moment we all have to be quite fluid in the way that we work, and yeah, and no one really knows what's going to happen next. I'm looking forward to reading Pan too, and Abby and Luke and the other publications as well. Yeah.
Well, thank you all for joining us for this discussion. Take Ciao. Care.
Great.
That was Daniel Shasky, Casey Kerr, and Matthew Galloway talking about publishing in a pandemic. We hope that you will come and pick up chapters from System to System in the gallery when Domino Domino opens next Wednesday, the 20th of May. The gallery will be open Tuesday to Friday, 12 to 4 p.m., and Saturday and Sunday, 12 to 3 p.m. Thank you for listening, and tune in next month on Friday, the 19th of June at 8 p.m. for our next episode of Art, Not Science. Mā te wā!
The Physics Room is generously supported by Creative New Zealand, the Christchurch City Council, The Rata Foundation, Three Boys Brewery, Scientech, Resine Paints, and the Crater Rim.